You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the New Churches Podcast. I want to jump right into our conversation. If you're a regular listener, which why would you not be? You can always subscribe, you know, like and share at the places you download your podcast. But in a prior episode, we actually had on James Roberson, who's leading a church called the Bridge Church in Brooklyn, Taylor Field, who's overseeing Compassion Ministries in the Northeast for what's called Send Relief, but was served for many, many years at Graffiti Church and more. And so in the last episode, we talked a lot about missiological realities in large cities in New York City. But one of the things we touched on that we wanted to come back to was the issue of finances. And again, this is a very important conversation. Most of our listeners would have maybe gone through or aware of the challenges of raising funds for a church plant. Now take that in Brooklyn. Now take that in Manhattan or more. So let's start by going first to James and asking, tell us a story of how you financed here. How much did you raise for your planted annual budget? You know, that kind of stuff. We mentioned last time prospectus or prospecti. So I'm guessing you wrote these numbers down at some point and started working towards that. Tell us about that.
Well, when I first started, I wanted to raise about 300,000, and I came nowhere near that. I'd had no churches support me the first year, so I only raised individual donors who were friends and family, $50, $100 a month. And then I eventually got the core team. So I started meeting people in New York and eventually turned those folks into givers. I was able to, my sending church, they were not able to support me financially, but I was able, they were telling folks within the church to support me. So what they did, so I just literally just sat down, had tons of lunches, tons of conversations. And so I was able to raise close to about $35,000, so not even close to what I needed at first.
Just like $300,000, very similar. The first number is the same.
So. And I felt good about that at the time. But what the way we got our apartment was, you know, that you had to have like a someone like co-signed essentially with you. And so our sending church co-signed for us. So that's what got us into an apartment. And then from there, we just slowly built. And so I really got mostly individual donors, friends, family, church people, but not really churches.
So how much did you raise? Can you tell us?
It's hard to remember back then, but
tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. Where would it land?
Yeah, probably hundreds of thousands. But okay. But again, yeah.
So dude, that sounds like a lot of money. You must be just living in a 6,000 square foot apartment there in Brooklyn. Oh, no. It was living the dream.
It was 600 square feet, very similar to Taylor, 600 square feet, two kids at the time.
So. 600 square feet, that's like your living room, right? That's not the whole...
That was the whole kit and caboodle. paying close to $3,000 a month for that.
Dang. Are you currently self-supporting? You know, let me just, for context, give everyone why I asked that question. Mm-hmm. In missiology, we think in terms of the three self formula, Henry Venn, Rufus Anderson, and others. It's the idea that you want to establish indigenous churches that are three self. They're self-governing, self-supporting, financial independence from foreigners is what they would have said in the old days, and self-propagating. They're starting their own churches. So are you there yet? What percent? I don't know the answer to this. So if it's not there yet, what percent internal, what percent from external funding?
So we were 90% self-supporting before the pandemic.
Yikes.
We lost 40% of our congregation during the pandemic. We are now back to 85% self-supporting now, but that will essentially go down some because we're looking for 24/7 space to be able to do church in. So,
Okay. So, and we were, when I was at Calvary, we were shocked. I was at Calvary during the pandemic. So they asked me to start. So I started as the interim online.
Okay.
And people didn't come back because they moved away.
I mean,
that's a big part of it. It's not, people don't realize that people just left New York City. So we had this young moms group. I think it was a MOPS group. And I think there was like 10 families and then there were two families because they just went, you know, I remember one saying, we're going back to Oklahoma. You know, so there, this was a dancer and they were, I'm going back to Oklahoma. So the Oklahoma's come up a lot in our conversation, Taylor. So these are your people. I was just in Oklahoma with the Nazarenes. All right. So Taylor, you know, and it's kind of hard to describe what you've done for a long time, because my guess is that you've always received outside support. And that was part of the model, but maybe the church is different. So tell us about how your finances worked and continue to work at Graffiti. And maybe explain to you a little bit what Graffiti is. It's complex. Give us a little bit of background.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think it's good to have both James and myself on because it's a big kingdom, isn't it? And there's a lot of wide range. So one of my things for people listening is I think, you know, our church was very different. It was focused on mercy ministries. And so whatever it is, you put your best foot forward. So because we did compassion ministries, number one, I just felt like the Lord was saying, make allies. So it was the national level, state level, our own church community, the association level, all these things, we were going to ask them for help. But let me just give you in terms of numbers, and I'm glad you talk about numbers. Some of my friends, we talk about, we help people raise funds. We call it the F word. You know, no one wants to talk about finances. You don't really want to say that in the things, but it's something that is really important. I think probably back, 4,000 years ago in the 80s, our budget, aside from my salary, which was cobbled together by a lot of different individuals and churches, was about $1,200 for the programs. And it is my salary. And so, but then you have in-kind donations, and your Graffiti started by attempting to express God's love in tangible ways, starting a storefront. So it started working with people, kids, teaching them how to read, and people that were living in abandoned buildings. So it was a kind of a different situation. But I'd say, whatever the church planter is, play the cards you're dealt, what you're calling, and focus on that. And so, we went with that. Because I've got this, longevity capital here. I think we kept our accounts on a notebook piece of paper.
Yeah.
First year. I mean, it's $1,200. You know, it's not
like it's easy to keep the track of that. Yeah.
So I think the thing that helped us, and I just want to say this, Ed, is for people thinking about finances, one of the things we always say, it's like, how many sources do you have? We say one source, many channels. So we do have many channels, but it's one source. And it's not some big church or a denomination. They're not our Heavenly Father. And so I think it's that attitude. It keeps us from being resentful of things, because we'll also say, here's our saying, don't get mad when Uncle Billy doesn't give you anything. Because if you get mad, so-and-so should have given us stuff, or that it blocks what God's doing.
That's interesting. Don't get mad. I like that.
Yeah, it keeps you. I mean, some people after 15 or 20 years, then get bitter and cynical and callous.
Yeah.
You can be mean as snakes. And you got to keep that simplicity of Christ and saying, okay, if he doesn't do that, he's going to do this.
Yeah. So in your church, Taylor, it started, again, I may be misremembering the history, but it started as a ministry center, but then a church did emerge out of that, and then a church that was changing in its own demographics and more. So how does the church and the finances for the church relate different from the ministry center, which might receive ongoing support? Is it working towards being a self-sufficient church, or is it, the Salvation Army often has, the Salvation Army is a church, people are aware of that, but they've thought of it as a ministry center. Commander Hodder, who leads the Salvation Army, would tell you to say that we're a church. This is just the outflow of who we are as a church. But was it a ministry center first? And then how did all that work? And how does it relate with the finances?
It was a ministry center first. And as we structured, we found we always were looking for different channels. And so we did structure. So the church was overseeing a nonprofit. And so that helped structure things for us. And basically, in terms of the finances, no, we're not completely self-supporting. We're doing grants. We're getting all kinds of things because that's our, I passionately believe those people need to participate in what we're doing.
Yeah, no, good.
The church, as it grew, it's by far the major contributor to all our ministries. But we are always knocking on doors to see if there are allies that could help us because of back to that passion, I believe they need to.
Yeah. And it is, it's important to kind of think in terms of missiologically as well, that we do put things in different categories. And one of the things is a ministry center tends to be an ongoing presence in a community. where church plants tend to become self-sufficient, you know, the three selves and more. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, living in an expensive city. What would you say now? Because, you know, Taylor, you're going to have somebody show up and you're now doing this whole, the whole Northeast. You're going to have somebody show up and say, I want to go to Urban Core Boston. I want to go to Urban Core Manhattan, Brooklyn. What would your advice to them be on finances? First, Taylor, and then James, you just pick up right after him and give your thoughts. And they don't have to be the same.
You know, I guess we're talking about our last podcast too. It's the confidence. It's what your calling is first.
Yeah.
First talk about that. Because otherwise, you know, I mean, if I hear someone, they're first talking about my insurance package and my benefits, all those kind of things. If it's not the calling first, then the other stuff's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's ironic. I mean, James and I, we actually walked through some of this, and James mm-hmm. was, you know, he was called. It wasn't easy that first year. Because we got to tell the struggle. It was tough first year, right, James? Is that fair to say?
Fair to say.
Say no more. You know, because you don't know all that stuff. And so we need to share that with people. So I think you first talk about calling, and then just as James said, you start thinking, well, what are some of the channels? How can we do this? We feel called to do this. Let's just think through what are some of those challenges? What do we need to do to make that happen? So, you know, that's how I start. And then expectations, like having podcasts like this saying, hey, it may be an avalanche of abundance, but it may not be at first. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So James, what would you add? So someone comes to me, what do I need to know about the finances? What are you going to tell
them? Very similar to what Pastor Taylor said, your confidence must draw, it must be categorically in God, because if it's not, then you're going to be depending on Big Bucks Tabernacle to fund you. And the reality
I
is,
I gotta say, I love Big Bucks Tabernacle. That's a funny name.
That's poetry.
You know, but I did that. I was like, oh man, I'm meeting with this church and they didn't do nothing. And I literally had individual moms who are single parent moms give me more than huge name churches. And so that whole Uncle Billy thing you were talking about, I mean, that's real. And the bitterness, the cynicism that happens when you essentially there's a feeling of you owe me. And you can't get into that corrosive mentality. You've got to know that God called you and he will fund what he's called you to. And once you're convinced of that, no city can stop the call of God. No city at all. It doesn't matter if it's New York City, if it's in Africa, if it's in Asia. It does not matter what city you're in. If God has called you to it, he will equip you with the skills, the finances, and the vision.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Good important stuff. All right. So big expense in living. I mean, it's just expensive to live in New York City. Big expense in lodging, that's there as well. But then the facility question comes in. And of course, that's always a challenge in and of itself. It was a challenge when COVID, because most, you know, gathering venues closed down, wouldn't let you have access to that. We experienced that, you know, Calvary's over at Hunter College now, where Redeemer used to meet. And during COVID, I mean, worst parts of COVID, and then there were requirements, what we had to do and not do. There's a history there in New York City. Those who don't know, the former two mayors ago was Michael Bloomberg. He actually didn't let the churches rent the public schools. Mm-hmm. And then the much more liberal Bill de Blasio comes in and does let the churches rent the public schools. And so far, you know, not, but again, then COVID comes. And so everything sort of changes. Mm-hmm. So where you mentioned in the prior episode, James, that you don't have your the jazz club shut down.
Yeah.
Where are you meeting now? I know you mentioned you're trying to find a 24/7 facility. Where are you meeting now? Why is that important? Why a 24/7?
Well, I'll start with the back end. And I think Taylor would agree with this. When you're able to have a static space in the community, it builds trust and credibility. People are used to seeing people grand open and grand close. And so I think the static nature of a space, a sign, visibility is radically important in a city that's deeply transient. For us right now, we started off in a church. We met at 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. Then we moved over to a jazz club. The jazz club opened and then shut down. And so we moved across the street to an art gallery. And so we're in an art gallery now. Our children's space is upstairs in a lawyer's office. So we use two different conference rooms, three different conference rooms for our youth up there. And And so, and we have a relocation team right now that's looking for some place that we don't have to do as many services and kind of have the kids in offices.
But that's a big, that's a whole nother level of financial commitment for you as well. That is still like looming in the headlights.
Yeah, that's going to be big. I mean, we're probably going to end up renting, and it will probably land somewhere between $20,000 to $27,000 a month.
Don't miss the prices too. In Manhattan, when we were kind of, I don't know what the right term would be. We didn't have a place. We didn't hadn't yet nailed down the place with Hunter College. We would rent places, like theaters that you would know, for $20,000 a week. I mean, it was stunning amounts of money. The church sold the building. It's the news. I won't tell you what the more details on what the news reported. The news reported $120 million they sold the building. And of course, then to rebuild it, and they're going to have space in it. So space becomes very, very valuable in New York City in a way that is hard to describe if you're not in that kind of urban context. And then everyone shares. There tends to be multiple churches that might be in that space. Even Calvary's planning to share with others. Taylor, you've got a facility, kept. Talk about how that fits into the ministry and the impact that it makes there, and how you've sort of stewarded that.
Yeah, let me just say, I've looked at life from both sides now. I know what it feels like not to have a space. We're in a storefront for many years, and it's challenging. Of course, it does help you improvise. And, you know, we used a Catholic church and a public school and a Spanish Baptist church. I mean, it helped you in some ways get into the neighborhood. But I think that I'll just tell James, and for people thinking, you know, it's very hard. It is different. You're always a guest. You're always a guest, and it's hard. It's different if you have your own space. And so it's huge. So we're blessed, and it took a long time. People kept going, when are you going to get finished with that building? I don't know if they do that to you, James. When are you going to get this? But, you know, once you get one, what we did say is, Lord, we don't want to be a sofa. We want to be a launching pad. That was our particular mission, even though we're never a large church, but we helped start churches. And because we had space and the value of space, just say when COVID came, many people were in schools and places where they had to shut down. We had space so we could become a dispensing center, which is part of our calling. So, man, I'm saying praise God for space. But let me tell James on the other side of the clouds, then you got to think about the leaky roof. And the pipes break, and you know, then you got a whole nother range of things. So and if you're not careful, you become a building manager. So I'm just telling you, but it is better. It was really helped us from our standpoint.
I'll tell you just for a fun story. Calvary had a hotel, which was the biggest nightmare. Imagine a church being in the hotel business in New York City, where you have to even get permission to shut down because you got union contracts, all sort of stuff. And it was a great idea when Billy Graham came and, like, you know, they talked about this light in the city, and became their biggest nightmare. So their biggest excitement is to get out of the hotel business, but it's just complicated. Yet, how do you? I mean, the space is millions upon $100 million, and yet that space can make a significant difference. But you were going to keep going, Taylor. Tell us more.
No, I guess that's, and I'm just thinking back now. I mean, we would go back to the root word for one of the root words for salvation in the Hebrew is make a space for. And I think Ed, you said, I mean, New York City, it's just to have space to value that really does make a difference, and it did help us to become a launching pad. And so I think whatever you have, you do it. I mean, church is not a building, but in New York City, it certainly helped to have it, but it took a long time for us to get one.
And I would say too, for those who are listening too, in the show notes, you can find links to both the ministries that we're talking about here. And if you want to get engaged and involved, we invite you to. I've known Taylor for decades and so thankful for what they're doing. And also just learning more about what James is doing. These are opportunities for you to be engaged and involved. I'm interested too, how you do this in your own world. You know, in 2 Corinthians 8, the churches of Macedonia gave generously out of their own poverty, right? There's not a lot that you're receiving a lot, but also how have you prioritized missions giving, church planning in the face of what's a remarkably expensive local ministry? How does that work for you? Let's go to James first.
We try to look for church planters that we think we can give a boost to. We've been able to support several church planters while they've come here. When we got here, I think, which is unique, in other cities, there weren't a ton of mother churches. You had, you know, guys like Taylor and Tim Keller, but outside of that, there weren't many. So we're not, I don't think we're at that. We don't have the level of credibility that Taylor does, but I do think that we can contribute. So we've been able to help several churches get started here in the city.
How about you, Taylor?
You know, part of us, I think the great thing about church planting is you get to set the tone of things, you know, like James was talking about leading out. And we just, in our church structure, we do say this, you know, the confused mind always says no if we get inundated by stuff. But in our church structure, we gave a percentage of what we had in our offering, made it part of our offering.
Yeah.
And that was our percentage. And that way, and that was from 10 to 25%, we always did. And we just said, look, we received so much, we need to give. But if you start out that way, it's not a big deal. If you try to add it later on, it's harder. But if you embed it in the beginning, it's just like, oh yeah, that's what we do. And so for us, that was helpful. And I think that's important for church planters, and especially in an urban core, to think, what am I going to do to look beyond our own self-interest as a church?
Yeah.
And what can we do to make that possible, and start at the beginning to do that? Just make it a percentage.
Yeah, I believe in that. I think it's a good and a good place for a start. But if you're in a network of churches or a denomination, a family of churches, there's almost always a path. In my denominational family, it's called the cooperative program. There's always a path that you can give, or might be directly involved in church planning, is to find a way to be engaged and involved. And, you know, we all kind of have networks or denominations mostly that are connected in some way. So be a part of receiving, but also blessing others. Hey, thanks everyone for listening to the New Churches podcast. And we're going to continue our conversation every episode. Make sure you like, subscribe, share, let other people know about it. It's the largest church planning podcast in the world. And we are hoping to provide helpful resource to you. Thanks to my guest, James and Taylor, and for their important work in New York City. We'll talk to you next time on the New Churches podcast.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us, or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.